Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long in studio. We'll take you to 6 o'clock tonight. At 6 o'clock tonight, we'll switch it to LSU's men's basketball as they play Auburn. And then at 6:30, that game will go to 105.3, and we'll have Pelicans pregame coverage. And at 7 o'clock, the Pelicans take on the Dallas Mavericks, and you can hear that game right here on the Big 870 WWL. 420, Ryan Roberts, who's covered both the East-West Shrine game, and I was in Mobile to cover the Senior Bowl, will be with us, and we'll talk a lot of draft and also information that he's hearing out there in the football world about a lot of different things that's happening. And Charlie, last night, I know Bob and I talked about this Monday. You and I talked about this yesterday. It was peculiar that there was not a set date interview for the Saints and Mike McCarthy. Now, knowing the agent world the way they are, and they all talk to one another, when that plane took off with the Saints officials to Philly, I told Bob the red flag goes up for everybody else that it had become serious between the Saints and Kellen Moore. And last night, McCarthy, I guess it was an agent call to say, hey, listen, I know you're interested in the job, but you're not going to get it. And let's save face here and say we're going to start all over and redo this in 2026. That's no guarantee you'll get a job in 2026 either. Again, this road has taken all kind of different turns with the Saints coaching position. But right now, that road seemingly leads to Philadelphia offensive coordinator Kellen Moore is where they have put their sights set. And for a lot of people that have texted and asked about, are they going to announce this? They're not going to announce this until officially, if it's Kellen Moore, until after Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
The NFL does not want you to take any limelight away from them next week. And due to the fact that Kellen is going to play calling on Super Bowl Sunday, he won't be around to have that press conference. But it's seemingly now, and this has taken a lot of crazy turns here and there, is all pointed toward Kellen Moore being the new head football coach of the New Orleans Saints.
So NFL Network's Mike Garofolo made a great point about this on Twitter the other day, Mike. He said 2 years ago, Eagles players, they played in the Super Bowl in Arizona, and Jonathan Gannon was their DC at the time.
Yep.
And then they played in the Super Bowl, and Gannon stayed in Arizona to become the next head coach of the Cardinals. Maybe seen something similar here, different side of the ball, offensive coordinator with Kellen Moore, but they're coming to New Orleans, and Moore may be staying in New Orleans. As you mentioned, they can't announce it until after the Super Bowl ends. However, all roads and all signs point that Kellen Moore is going to be the next head coach of the Saints. And we talked about it last night, Mike. It was those two candidates that we were really keeping an eye on with McCarthy and Moore. But as you said, as soon as they flew out to Philadelphia, the interest was clear. They wanted to have, and it was a long in-person interview that they did. They said it went into the early hours of the morning. So, I mean, the interest was clear. And they sat down with them. I imagine, like you mentioned, it was just kind of McCarthy saving face to say that he was pulling out of the coaching search and that he was looking more towards 2026. But, yeah, it feels like Kellen Moore is now your guy. So we won't hear anything official and for at least the next 11 days. But it is pretty exciting that, like we talked about it, on the show yesterday, Mike, you know, taking the home run hack, right? Like swinging for the unknown. But if you make contact, that ball is going 400 feet over the left field fence. and we'll see what happens here.
It's the unknown about any coach you hire.
And yeah, Charlie, no, I agree. You
know, we talked about this yesterday. Hiring a coach who's got skins on the wall. This team, now, for some people, they maybe weren't around then, but they hired a guy that's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Hank Stram, to coach this football team. Didn't last but a couple of years. He got run off by John Meekum.
He also talked about Coach Dinka.
Bum Phillips.
Yep.
Hard. Great success with the Oilers. Not so much here with the Saints. Then Mike came in. Mike was kind of the celebrity coach. You know, he had become almost bigger than life, so to speak, doing commercials, on television, everything else. But he couldn't bring all those players that he had in Chicago with him to New Orleans, and it didn't work. So you hired three guys that had great success before, didn't work here. And you think about the two guys that had the most success. Jim Mora had never been a head coach before, other than in the USFL. He had great success in the USFL, won two championships there. Hebert kind of spotted him. He should have been three, but they beat him one time.
Right.
And so Coach Mora comes here, had success, got him to the playoffs, but no playoff wins, and then Sean Payton comes here and changed sort of the look across the country, how people felt about the Saints franchise. Now, Drew Brees had a big part in it also, but Sean really changed culture here, and that's really saying something. So now you're taking a young coach, and we'll have Babe Laufenberger on with
yes.
us tomorrow. Babe is the guy that I thought of right away. Steve and I were talking this morning. Has had a lot of interaction with Kellen Moore when he's in Dallas. That's where the team he covers. And we'll have Babe on to talk to us about it tomorrow. And most of the people that I've talked to have all said, hey, he's a really good offensive mind. The big question mark is, tell me who he's going to bring in to run his defense.
Yep.
Who he's going to bring in to run his defense. And a lot of agents, I've had a couple of them tell me this morning, they think that maybe the agent for Mike McCarthy, not maybe cutting a deal and staying one more year in Dallas and then kind of pulling out thinking he'd have all these opportunities. It was only one team that, you know, he showed interest in, and that was the Saints, and they didn't have reciprocating interest back in him.
Yeah, the Bears, I think, had reported interest as well, but they were always, like, Ben Johnson was
the guy. No, Ben was their guy.
Yeah, exactly. I agree 100%, Mike. And so, you know, it's really intriguing because, like you mentioned, Sean was the last coach they hired that didn't have any head coaching experience, and they hit a grand slam with Sean. And so Mickey, in his end-of-season presser, was asked about it, just like, I think, basically, I don't want to quote it because I'm not going to get it correct, but he was asked, why should Saints fans have faith in you getting this process correct? And he said, because we've done it before. My question is, I wonder if Mickey kind of sees a little bit of Sean with Kellen Moore and throughout this interview process, and he wonders if he can kind of capture lightning in a bottle twice, so to speak, Mike. And we'll see.
The personalities are totally different. Man, Sean was an alpha when he walked in that room.
Yeah.
We'll see, because I do think the fear factor, and I think there is still that part in coaching, fear of you losing your job and everything else and pressure to be put on you, there is still part of that. Fear is a great motivation in this world. A lot of people don't like to hear it, but it is true. Fear that you might lose your job, fear you don't get paid, all that sort of thing. Sean sort of could press the right buttons on different people to do it. You didn't see that at all with Dennis Allen.
Yeah.
He wasn't able to do that with players. Can Kellen Moore be that guy?
That's and once again, it's the big unknown because he's never been a head coach. And so you are taking the home run swing. And if you whiff, you whiff and you strike out. But Mike,
he better get players.
I agree with you, though.
Because that is where this football team is really lacking. Now, they're not going to come out and tell you, but it's the truth. You don't have enough good core young football players. You can hire whatever coach you want. Coaching matters. But you better have players.
Personnel.
And they don't have enough at this stage to turn the course with this team. Can they do it this offseason? Unless they have a change philosophy on how they get players, Charlie, it's going to be a long road.
No, I agree 1,000%. But, Mike, I'm with you as well, though, Mike, about you know, if you're bringing in Kellen, you know that he's the offensive mind. Who are you getting to run your defense? Because, you know, we talked off air about this a little bit with Kafka. Who the defense, Wink Martindale would have potentially been the guy that he would bring in to run his defense. And Wink's an accomplished defensive coordinator in the NFL. Who would Kellen Moore go and get if you hire him to be your next head coach? Like, who would be his defensive coordinator? Who would be running his defense? There's a couple names that come to mind right off the rip, right? But, you know, this is all entirely speculative. But do you have any kind of ideas early on about who he would reach out to? Hey, I'm going to be the next head coach of the Saints. This is who I would want to reach out to bring in to run my defense.
I'd have a better idea of who he would bring in to basically be his quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, and that would be Doug Nussmeier.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Garrett's dad.
Right.
You know, they worked together this year. And, man, Doug is, you know, Bobby always says about, you got to be almost like a military brat. You jump from one place to the next. Well, that's what's happened to Doug Nussmeier. Man, look at that resume Doug's got. And it's lengthy, that he's went to a lot of different places to coach in both the college level and also in the pros. The defensive coordinator spot is going to be interesting because there are former head coaches that are out there.
I think we're on the same wavelength here, Mike. I'm going to throw out a name early on. And once again, I have not seen any reporting on this. What about Brandon Staley?
They do have a connection because they worked with the Chargers.
Yeah. He's currently the assistant head coach in San Francisco. He was a failed head coach with the Chargers. But we talked with Jeff about this yesterday as well, Mike, that, you know, when you have these failed head coaches, they're not going to get another head coaching opportunity. Like, if they're still a good mind with whatever side of the ball they're on. Look at Steve Spagnuolo, right? No Kansas City fan at all is worried that he's ever going to get another head coaching opportunity, but he's still one of the best defensive coordinators in the entire NFL. And so that's why they've gone on this dynasty run, is that they have Andy Reid running the offense, Steve Spagnuolo running the defense, and Pat Mahomes running a quarterback as well. If they can get a DC that they're very comfortable with, that's a great defensive mind, that they're also not worried about getting another head coaching opportunity, that's kind of a slam dunk.
Man, my thing is, I don't worry about if you'll get another one. I want the best defensive coach I can get.
That's true as well.
Because that's not my side of the ball if I'm Kellen Moore. He's going to run my defense, okay, whoever I bring in. And that connection to Brandon Staley's there because of that 1 year
it's
he spent with
Mike.
Him out in L.A. with the Chargers. We come back. We'll have on with us Ryan Roberts, who covers the NFL draft and the NFL for A to Z Sports right here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long in studio. While we're trying to get Ryan Roberts on with us, Ryan's on location. We're trying to hook him up now. They got one of the texters asked about, he read a report about, do you think Mickey Loomis wants to have the new coach keep some of the Saints' present coaching staff on the new staff? He said that at the press conference that the new head coach would pick the coaches. And, man, already you've had people leave the staff. Hodges is going to Cincinnati. And, you know, they got other people already, you know, that are talking to other teams about it. So I don't think that is any reason why the coach is not coming here. A particular coach is not interested in the Saints. I think it's more a personnel issue. Looking at it, okay, I don't have a young quarterback. I don't have a large group of core young players that I can build around. I've got to build it myself. And you got a salary cap issue you got to deal with, especially in 2025. That's more of the problem than anything else. To me, it's all about talent. I'm a lot better coach when I got better talent around me. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, he covers the NFL, also NFL draft, Ryan Roberts from A to Z Sports. Ryan, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Ryan, the first question I'll ask you about is about Mason Taylor. I was telling Charlie mm-hmm. this. It's obvious that there are two first-round pick grade tight ends in Tyler Warren from Penn State and Coastin Loveland from Michigan. And Coastin didn't get a lot of ink because, man, the quarterback throwing him the football, that wasn't real good this year. But my thing is, if there's a third tight end that goes in round one, it's Mason Taylor. And I see it. He's been such a good player for LSU. They've not had a tight end like him in my lifetime that can catch the footballs that size. He's got great length. really sure-handed, and he's got much better as an inline blocker. Yeah, he's not great doing that, but he does a solid job. I think about that. Mm-hmm. I look at the end of round one, Ryan, and I think about Kansas City. Okay, you got an aging Travis Kelce. How many more years can he play? And would they think about, you know what, we'll draft the next guy that we think could fill that void, and we pick Mason Taylor?
I mean, I think it's possible. It's actually a very interesting year in the NFL draft space for tight ends because, I mean, there's several teams in the first round that you can look at and say, like, they need a tight end. Like, I mean, New York Jets are one of the top 10 that I wouldn't say is unrealistic for maybe a Tyler Warren to go to. You talk about the Los Angeles Chargers, the Denver Broncos. You mentioned the Kansas City Chiefs for the heir apparent to Travis Kelce whenever he decides to hang it up. Like it, there is a reasonable possibility that there might be a third tight end in the draft in the first round when all is said and done. And I think Mason's right in the conversation. I think it's like him and Gunnar Helm from Texas is another guy that I think the league likes quite a bit. But what Mason has going for him is I think you were spot on. He got a lot better in like the little parts of playing the position this year because he was a little bit banged up in 2023, right? So he kind of had that full healthy season. I thought he looked a little bit more explosive out of his breaks this year. I probably think that that has something to do with just being healthy for the most part, right? Playing in line a little bit more. And he's one of those guys that when you're talking about like that third, fourth tight end, you start to get a couple guys that are a little bit specialized in how they win. Like if we're talking about like a Harold Fannin Jr. out of Bowling Green, like that's a pure movement-based guy. Like he has to play wing. He has to play in the slot. Like he's not an all-around type of player. And then also you can't discount this because NFL scouts certainly don't. It helps when your dad was a Hall of Fame player, right? Like you have that genes to you as well. You have those NFL bloodlines that people are going to gravitate towards. So I think Mason Taylor has a very good chance of being that third tight end just kind of overall in this class. And I know the NFL values him a lot because like I said, I mean, he had like third round grades before the year, like from a lot of scouts that I talked to from Blessville, all that type of stuff. So he was well-liked even before the season. I thought he was a much better player in 2024 than even he was in 23.
Your thoughts on Jack Besh? I remember him coming, he signs with LSU. He was a guy that was not an early commitment, and he wanted to come to LSU, but LSU kind of went on him a little late when some of the other guys kind of peeled off. And I remember talking to Coach O about it, and he was like, Mike, we're going to kind of put him maybe like a flex tight end. He's sort of a tweener type of guy. And I think we could use him in the slot. I think he'd really be good there. And we could also put him out wide if we have to. And I look at him and I watched him and when he left here, go to TCU. And body-wise, and I'm not trying to compare talent, body-wise, man, doesn't he look a lot like Puka Nacua? I mean, he's got some of the same body traits, hand catch, eye coordination skills that Puka did. Now, he's a more recognizable player because he had the huge season at TCU and certainly what's happened, he had so many of his relatives play at LSU, and then, you know, his brother tragically killed here on New Year's Eve in the terror attack here in New Orleans. But, man, I like your thoughts on Besh, because I think in the middle rounds, third, fourth round, he's a guy that could feel that real physical receiver that'll run those inside routes, and he's versatile.
Yeah, well, it was so much fun to watch their passing game this year because 2023 obviously was a struggle, but we saw full season of Josh Hoover at quarterback. You saw not only Betch, but like you also saw Savion Williams, who's kind of a do-it-all kind of space player, could play a little running back at times, run wildcat, like does a lot of different things. So that passing game was just a lot of fun. I mean, but when you talk about him, I think you coined it perfect. Like, he looks like a Los Angeles Rams to me. Like, he's like that West Coast big power slot. You know what I mean? Like, he might not be as flexible as some other route runners in this class, but he is nuanced in his understanding of how to run routes, and he's incredibly explosive running out. Like, he's one of those dudes that if you're trying to press him, you're going to be up for the challenge because he is going to be explosive both off the line of scrimmage and in and out of the breaks. And he doesn't have a ton of tells as a route runner either. Like, he's one of those kids that just, like, everything kind of looks the same. It looks the same. And when that repetition is the same, you know, as you know, the more times you see something, the more chances you have to give something up, because everything just kind of, that repetition looks the same over and over again. Like, you don't know exactly what it is. The stem looks the same constantly. So I think that deception, I think he's also pretty underrated after the catch. He's not like dynamic after the catch, but he's strong enough. He's physical enough to make some plays in that capacity as well. So I think in that brand of football we continue to see, right? Like, everybody wants the Shanahan McVay style of offense today. I think he's a player that could be very valuable on the NFL level, because like you said, he could play a little, you know, I think he's best in the slot. I agree with you there, but he could play some Z. You can motion him a little bit. He's physical after the catch. He's strong at the catch point as well, even though he's more of a guy that's going to win as a route runner. So I think he's going to be very valuable in the NFL. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being a starter, you know, within the first couple of years, because again, that style of offense, he kind of fits perfectly into kind of what is the big trend, I guess, now in the NFL, for lack of a better word.
Ryan, Mike already kind of brought up the tight end position, talking about Mason Taylor, and then also the top two guys with Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren. And it's a really good position this upcoming draft, but the most loaded position feels to be on the defensive line. And there's a trio of Ole Miss guys at the Senior Bowl in Mobile this week that I'm very interested in. Obviously, the defensive tackle, Walter Nolan, but also the edge rushers in Princely Amon Mielen and then Jared Ivey. Mike and I have talked a little bit about those two guys off the edge, but also Walter Nolan, who could easily be a first-round pick just based off of the talent that he has, rushing the passer and stopping the run from the interior. So a really loaded trio of Ole Miss guys at the Senior Bowl that should be really interesting to watch.
Ryan, I also have you talk about Yusuf Fagiz, who's the fourth guy on the list. You saw him at the East-West Shrine Game.
Man.
So give us a breakdown of the all four of them. Give me that group. I'll take that pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, there's some NFL teams that would take that group right now. I mean, honestly, I like that you threw in, you can't forget Big 38 in the middle. That's going to play some, you know, going to play some Wildcat quarterback at times near the goal line, right? Like, you need to kind of throw him in there. I mean, he's a really fun player. Obviously, he's not as physically talented, obviously, as like a Walter Nolan is, but like, he has a role in the NFL without question. Like, he's going to be a day three kid that I think is just going to play in the NFL for a long time. But when you talk about like that train of thought for a second, and then I'll get to Nolan and I'll get to Yuman Mielen. Jared Ivey for me is just going to play in the NFL for like 10 years and nobody's going to talk about him much because he's not as flashy as like Princely is, but he's just, you know, he's 6'5 plus, he's 280 plus pounds. He's got length. He's got physicality. He could play in both an even and odd man front. Like, he could just do so much. You're going to kind of blink your eyes. You're going to be like, huh, is that like a 10-year pro next to Jared Ivey? Like, he's just a solid player for a very long time. So I like him a ton. I think he's one of the most undervalued players in this class because, again, he's just not as flashy as some. Yuman Mielen is the flash off the edge, right? Like, he's the kid that when you draw it up, 260 plus, 34-inch arms, explosive off the get, and then he's got great bends. His big thing was when he was at Florida before Ole Miss, you saw it, but you needed to see consistently, right? Like, you just felt like there would be one flash play, then you wouldn't see him for like 7 or 8 plays, and then there'd be games like that too. It's like one game, it looks like he's a first rounder, then the next game you're just like, I don't even know where the kid is. Like, he just kind of disappeared a little bit. He was a lot more consistent this year, obviously, with the double-digit sack season. And I know Ole Miss had, like, I think 52 sacks in 13 games this year. So it was a pretty wild just kind of trajectory that they went on this year. But he's the flash. Walter Nolan is huge flash, like huge. I mean, he's one of the most physically gifted defensive tackles to come out the last couple of years. Now, there's still some figuring out as far as like the pecking order in this class, because, you know, everyone's going to talk about Mason Graham. You know, there's Kenneth Grant, obviously his teammate from Michigan, the Derek Harmon from Oregon. There's a lot of really good defensive tackles this year. So it's just about figuring out exactly where he fits in that order. But I mean, that Ole Miss defense is a lot of fun. I mean, we could have extended this one. One of my favorite players in the class is Chris Paul on the second level. And then I know Amos at corners had a tremendous year for them as well. So the way that Ole Miss was able to go from a pedestrian defense to one of the most talented defenses in college football in a couple years due to the transfer portal and all that type of stuff. It's been pretty remarkable to watch is how many NFL guys they have on that defense this past year.
Ryan, I'm going to ask you a question more detailing toward the Saints now with their coaching search, and you've covered the league for a number of years now. This is a talent issue on this football team. Not enough of it. Yep. And if you can hire whoever you want as the coach, unless you get the talent part right, you're stuck in neutral. You're stuck in football purgatory. And they don't have enough core good young players, say in their, you know, from that 23 to 27 range. That is the crux of why, you know, some of these, you know, coaches, they look, where's the young quarterback? It's not here. Where's all that talent? I'm not going there. I think that is a big part of why a lot of these coaches and their agents, because you know as well as I do, man, they sway them a lot of different ways on exactly where they want them to go. This football team has got to be able to get back in the draft business and hit big.
Oh, it really does. And it's a shame what we're seeing, obviously, with the coaching search and everything. It's just not a position that I think is in heavy demand because, like you said, it's not a great roster and it's not in a great cap situation either. So, like, you're just like, man, you need to hit on a couple drafts to flip this thing over because you're just not going to have the money to play with from the free agency side for a little bit here. So they really do need to do a great job because the way I look at it is when I talk about the premium positions, right, in football, you're going to talk about your outside pass rushers. You're going to talk about your offensive tackles. You're obviously going to talk about your quarterbacks. And, like, there's questions at pretty much every one of those spots in New Orleans. Like, Derek Carr is a good quarterback. He's solid. You know, he's solid, a good quarterback. He's okay. But he's not really an elevator, right? And when you have a roster that is depleted of talent, you're going to have to depend on him to try to make chicken salad out of chicken you-know-what sometimes, right? So, and it's not going to work all the time. And then you look at, like, wide receiver. I mean, I think their leading receiver only had, like, 400 yards this year. I know Chris Olave was banged up, but, like, you still need to get more talent around Chris Olave in the passing game and to be able to stay healthy there. Offensive tackle, obviously Trevor Penning's been a disappointment at right tackle and figuring out the, you know, just the tackle depth of the future. And then the pass rushers, like, I mean, Cam Jordan is an awesome player, but, like, Cam Jordan is nearing the end, obviously. And Carl Granderson is a really good, probably like number two rusher, but you probably need a number one, a guy that is a true difference maker there. You need help at corner. I mean, like, it's a bad situation.
It's all over the board, Ryan. All over the board. Name a spot.
I will say this, though. They are one of my favorite teams, though, this time of year, because no matter who I mock draft them to this time, I look good. You know, I get a need. It's impossible not to have a solid mock draft right now for New Orleans because they just have so many open needs. So hopefully they can flip it around. I do think the draft is going to be paramount for them because, like I said, them being not in the best cap situation in the world, you're going to need to find some young talent. And I hope they're able to do that. Pass rusher, somebody in the first round that's able to help them kind of quickly.
Real quick, before we let you run, Ryan, I wanted to get your thoughts on Mike Green. You know, a lot of the times when you look at the Senior Bowl, you see some of these smaller school guys and they can make a name for themselves, for good or for bad, for some of these teams in the NFL draft process. But, you know, Mike Green, I follow the Sun Belt because I'm a UL grad. Obviously, Marshall took down the Cajuns in the Sun Belt championship game.
Don't hold that against him.
Yeah, no, I know. But Mike Green, 17 sacks in his sophomore campaign in 2024. And then I'm looking at social media and I just see this rep against Josh Connerly, who's a first round prospect, an offensive tackle from Oregon, and he just plows through him, like, straight up. And I think a lot of the people were maybe a little bit concerned with the weight for Mike Green, but then his measurables come out from the Senior Bowl, he's 250 pounds. And so Mike Green is a really intriguing prospect. I wonder where he's going to end up on a lot of people's big boards. It's just a stacked defensive line class, and I think Mike Green's a really intriguing prospect.
Yeah, I think when you talk to people that are kind of in the know and, like, on the NFL draft analyst side, like, I always think of, like, Dane Brugler from The Athletic is a great one. Obviously, Mel Kiper has deep ties in the NFL. So usually what their boards are usually kind of stacked based upon their ears, not their eyes all the time, right? It's kind of like what they're hearing around the league. And Mike Green has been well-liked in NFL circles. I mean, even before the year, before his 17-sack season, like, he was well-liked, you know, and people really gravitate towards it because, like you said, the weight issue is the big one. You know, he still has the lack of, like, he doesn't have super long arms, he doesn't have a great wingspan, but, like, he's a really explosive athlete. He's bendy, obviously, and, like you said, like, there's even some power there, you know, being able to convert speed to power against Josh Connerly from Oregon. That's probably going to be a first rounder more than likely in April as well. So there's a lot to like with Mike. I will say this, I don't like that sometimes we do this during Senior Bowl week, and I literally put out a tweet on I think on Monday, or it might have been Tuesday, I can't remember, but I just kind of said, like, hey, remember, this is a part of the evaluation, this is not the full evaluation, because I think a lot of people just see, like, 3 days of practice, and they just kind of let their imaginations run wild. Mike Green's been great this week, and that's no shot against him at all, and I think he's going to end up being a first-round pick in this class, But the one thing I will say is it's not a great offensive tackle class this year, right? So him dominating a bunch of offensive tackles at the Senior Bowl, it's impressive, but like there is a little bit of a caveat of like, it's not the best offensive tackle class that's down here just in general. Now, him doing it against Connerly is a different story. Like, that's a nice rep, obviously. So I think there's a little bit of a grain of salt there. But I will say, like, explosive, bendy. I do have questions of, like, you know, is he – and I know it's a passing league now, but, like, he's not great against the run, right? Like, he's a little bit limited in that capacity because I just don't think he plays well outside of his frame in the run game because he's a little bit short
of length.
I'd
run the ball right at him if I was playing against
him. Exactly. Oh, I would too. A screen game right at him, run right at him. Like, try to slow him down in his tracks the best you can. I mean, I really would be physical with him, but I think he has all the talent in the world. He's a pass rusher, and in today's game, obviously, teams are going to gravitate towards that type of player.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. Always enjoy your insights. You do a great job, and we always appreciate your time and efforts, and I know you're traveling all over, so we appreciate that, brother.
Thanks, Ryan.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for your time as always. Thank you.
All right. Ryan Roberts does a great job covering the NFL draft for A to Z Sports. At one time was the chief guy covering Notre Dame football. He still loved Notre Dame football, too. He's still trying to get over that national championship loss. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Tay along with Charlie Long in studio. Went a little bit long with Ryan Roberts, but we always like to have him on. He is in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. Also want to congratulate Cam Ward, Miami of Florida quarterback, who won the, was announced officially today, the 2024 Manning Award. And so congratulations to Cam Ward. What a wild ride for him. I saw him at Incarnate Word, and then he goes to Washington State and then Miami of Florida. You talk about a crazy trip.
Oh, yeah.
From San Antonio to Washington State and then Miami of Florida, and today it was officially announced by Archie Manning that Cam Ward, the winner of the 2024 Manning Award. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. Want to tell everybody at 520, Jen Hale from Fox Sports will talk to us about the Saints head coaching search, also about the Super Bowl matchup. And at 540, Jeff Nowak, who is in Mobile for the Senior Bowl, will talk to us certainly about the ramification, what happened last night, Mike McCarthy pulling out of the search. Looks all roads lead toward Kellen Moore at the present, and also about the players at the Senior Bowl. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long in studio. Again, 520, Jen Hale from Fox Sports will talk to us about the Saints head coaching search, also about Super Bowl matchup. 540, Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter, also our WWL Sports digital content producer, will be live from the Senior Bowl in Mobile. We'll talk to him about what's happening with the Saints coaching search and also players at the Senior Bowl. Charlie, today, even though it is not official yet, but it looks as though LSU has brought in two well-known guys into their coaching staff, one being Lance Guidry. I've known Lance for years. I watched him play at McNeese. He was a defensive back there, later became a head coach at McNeese State. He was a defensive coordinator at Miami of Florida last year, was released from that job, and looks as though they're going to bring him in as one of the defensive analysts. And now his specialty is coaching in the secondary. That's where he's kind of made his bread and butter, coaching in the secondary. So he'll be there most likely to help out with Corey Raymond in coaching the secondary. And Alex Atkins, longtime Florida State offensive line coach, who was released after the season, looks as though he'll be brought in as the tight end coach and running game coordinator, and will be helping out Brad Davis and the offensive line at LSU. So two well-known guys. Lance Guidry knows Louisiana up and down. He's recruited every little inch of Louisiana. Alex Atkins is known, good offensive line coach, but a great recruiter. Got himself in a little bit of trouble with the NCAA a little bit, trying to get one of those Georgia linemen to go to Florida State. But, hey, listen, it's the NIL world, and things happen. But it looks as though both Lance Guidry, Alex Atkins will be joining the coaching staff for the LSU Tigers.
Well, there you go. And as you mentioned, the recruiting aspect of it, right, Mike? I mean, that's the biggest thing here. So we'll keep an eye on it, wait for it to be official. But as you mentioned, it sounds like it's heading that way. And real quick, Mike, before we get to Jen, I wanted to bring this up because our friend Bobby Marks from ESPN, who came on the show a couple weeks back and talked about Brandon Ingram's future with the Pelicans, yep. He made a recent article on ESPN titled NBA Trade Deadline Tiers, Deal Scenarios, Outlooks for All 30 Teams. And one thing that really stood out to me, he has San Antonio making a swing for Brandon Ingram. Now, here's
with all those draft choices, I get that, but you can go into the details.
Yes. So here's what Bobby said. And Bobby came on with us a couple weeks ago
and said
a first round pick would be kind of the price tag for BI, if not maybe a little bit extra on top of that to make salaries work. So Bobby says that San Antonio has 12 first round picks over the next 7 years and the right to swap first round picks in 3 different years. So, and that they also are one of the few teams, because Bobby also mentioned this, that have cap space this summer. There's not a lot of money to go around. And for Brandon, who's looking for, you know, the max contract, he wants the $50 million plus per year. He's not getting it here. San Antonio is apparently one of the teams that could pay him a decent, sizable chunk of that. So, but what Bobby has for this BI trade to San Antonio, he has us moving on from Ingram and Daniel Tice, our backup center. And he has New Orleans receiving, Zach Collins, Keldon Johnson,
very interesting.
Keldon Johnson, a 2027 second round pick via Charlotte and a 2028 second round pick via Denver. So he also
first
round pick in that deal. He adds the addition of Ingram would give San Antonio another building block to pair with Wembanyama. The Spurs have the future financial flexibility to sign Ingram to an extension after the trade or in free agency. And more importantly, the trade does not cost San Antonio one of its future first round picks. So Keldon Johnson, very intriguing. 2 second-round picks, less intriguing. If they could somehow swing a first-round pick in that type of deal, I'm running to the table and accepting it. Ingram's not going to be here for the foreseeable future.
Those two players I like.
Yeah, I agree, too. When I was looking at it, like, I like Keldon Johnson a lot.
Yes.
Zach Collins is more of a meh. Maybe that's kind of Bobby's way of making contracts work and making the trade work.
I would think.
So he'll probably have to get both in return. But if you can somehow get a first instead, it may be a protected first, right? But get a first round pick instead of those 2 seconds. Yeah, I am taking that deal 10 times out of 10. And I think a lot of Pelicans fans would agree with me.
I agree with you there, Charlie. Also, too, want to repeat, Cam Ward, quarterback, Miami of Florida, was announced this afternoon, the winner of the 2024 Manning Award, best quarterback in the country last year. And also, too, I got to send out special congratulations from old buddy Travon Reed, Thibodaux High School, and was one of the greatest athletes, football players I've seen on the Bayou. Played quarterback at Thibodaux, signed with Auburn. Ended up, I think at first they put him at wide receiver. He switched over to the secondary, played in the NFL for a number of seasons, actually got signed to a contract, played a couple years with the Seattle Seahawks, and the guy that signed him, Jim Nagy.
There you go.
The executive executive president of the Reese's Senior Bowl is the one. He was a scout for Seattle at that time. Congratulations, Travon. He is the new cornerbacks coach for USC. So he goes from the Bayou to Auburn, where he was, an assistant secondary coach. Then he was the secondary coach for UCF last year. Two of his players are at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. So he's developing those players well. Got him a job to L.A., Los Angeles and USC. So congratulations to Travon Reed. Great guy in this world. And I'm happy for him. And he's on a high trajectory that one day he's going to get a spot more than this cornerback's job at USC. We come back. We have on with us Fox Sports NFL sideline reporter Jen Hale right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, Fox Sport NFL sideline reporter Jen Hale. Also, you can watch her every Sunday morning. She's on Fox and Friends giving her insights on the weekend games. Jen, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Hi there, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Jen, right off the bat, I'll get you. I don't know how much interaction you've had with Kellen Moore. I'll get your thoughts because it's seemingly now that one heavy road leading right toward Kellen Moore. And when you take a private plane and go talk to him for almost a full day or 12, 14 hours in a day, that's a long stretch. It would seemingly be pointed in that direction. But the other question I have, you probably know Gail Benson, not probably, you know Gail Benson better than 99% of any other reporters anywhere in the country. She's got to know that this hire's got a hit because of the fact, you know, we live kind of in a big, small town, so to speak. And it means so much to this community. You see the emotions. I know I do. Every Monday, go tank up my truck to go to Mississippi. I can tell the Saints or LSU win or lose. Just by the reactions to people coming up to me. And either they not in a good mood or they in a really good mood if they win. That has to be a hit here. And understanding the fact, this team right now doesn't have enough talent to win. And coaching does matter, but you got to get talent to win in the NFL. And right now they just don't have it. But your thoughts on, you know, on Gail Benson and trying to get, because I know Mickey Loomis is the guy football-wise, but I know who's the owner. Who cut the checks, okay? It's Gail Benson. Your thoughts on Gail and having to get this right with this organization?
No doubt she knows she has to get it right, and she's committed to getting it right. And look, it's her call to fire Dennis Allen. A lot of the Saints brass were against that idea. They thought, hey, this is due to injuries. Look at the first two games of the season when the Saints were on fire. We need to let this team get healthier, give DA more time. She's the one who said absolutely not. And it was after that game against the Denver Broncos where Sean Payton came back, Drew Brees was honored by going into the Saints Hall of Fame, and it was an absolute abject disaster of a game, Thursday night, I believe, because I was able to go to that one, actually. And that's when she had enough, and she said absolutely a line in the sand now. So not only is she hyper aware of it, but she's ready to put her reputation on the line and do things. That's why DA's gone and fired. As far as this next coaching candidate, Kellen Moore, first of all, Mike, you look at everybody else that have either withdrawn or already been hired by another team. Kellen's one of the few left out there. What I do like about him is that he very much believes in keeping his offense unpredictable. He's smart. When he looks at how he'll approach his system, he's a big self-scouter, and he wants to change his tendencies every few games. I think he's built for the modern NFL. My question would be, does he have the weapons around him here with the Saints? Can he put enough weapons around a Derek Carr, say, with the Saints' salary cap problem? My fear for this team is that they're looking at a couple of lean years as they work their way out of salary cap hell.
Yeah, I agree with you. The other thing, too, if you could hire Kellen Moore, Jen, and I could bring the Eagles' offensive line and Saquon and Jalen Hurts and the receivers.
Hey,
give me the tag. I'm ready to go in.
Sign us up.
Yeah. One of the things with Kellen is he was always known in Dallas as sort of a pass-happy coach. He loved to throw the football. A lot like Sean Payton. When he was in Dallas, he wanted to throw the football a lot. He goes to Philly, and I see that offensive line, and I got Saquon. They became a run-oriented team. He changed his philosophy to fit what was best for the personnel, and it helped lead him to get to Super Bowl Sunday.
Absolutely. That O-line, they are fantastic. Saquon Barkley, over 2,000 yards in the regular season. And then look what he did in the postseason. He got even better. He had over 100 rushing yards in the first postseason game, over 200 in the second. Kellen certainly knows how to build upon a strength. He doesn't have the ego that we see some coordinators come in with, that, hey, this is my scheme. We're going to stay true to what we do. I'm good enough to scheme up anything, any player. Kellen plays to the strengths that his individual team members have at the time. I do think against this Chiefs defense and our old friend Steve Spagnuolo, who used to be a defensive coordinator here with the Saints, I do think they're going to have to pass more. I don't think they can rely as heavily on the run game. They cannot be one-dimensional. And look, I think if there's anything that's going to be the Eagles undoing, it would be that they have not done a good job of getting the pass game going during the regular season. Little bit better in that game versus the Bills, but still, I think that's going to be the Achilles heel. I think that's probably what's keeping Kellen Moore up at night right now leading into the Super Bowl game.
You brought up Steve the last time I met up with him. He was like, is Jen still living in New Orleans? I was like, yeah, she's still living there. So I said, yeah, she's so all over the country. But yeah, she's still living here in New Orleans. One of the things I saw when the Commanders played the Eagles, the Commanders could not cover Zach Ertz, Jen, at tight end. Man, if I'm Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and I got Travis Kelce, I'm like, wait a minute. They couldn't cover Zach. We gonna pump the football to Travis Kelce in this game because that seemingly was a major mismatch between what the Eagles were trying to do to cover Zach Ertz. And at this stage of his career, I mean, Travis Kelce's going into Pro Football's Hall of Fame. That's nothing against Zach, but Travis Kelce's a better football player. If I were the Eagles defensively, I think I can stop the run, but how I match up covering Kelce would keep me up at night.
There's no doubt about that. And look, he was kind of pedestrian in the regular season, much like a lot of the Chiefs game all across the field. But boy, they know how to flip the switch at the right time, don't they, Mike? They did just enough to win in the regular season. And then it seems like every game in the postseason, they've gotten a little bit better, a little bit better. I think this is going to be Travis Kelce's best game of the season. He's been saving up for it. They've been here so many times. They thrive in that spotlight. They're able to find that extra gear instead of being deer in the headlights when those big national lights come on. And this is as big as it gets. You got to think Travis Kelce might be pondering retirement. What a way to go out if he is, with a three-peat, with a asterisk, an exclamation point at the end of his no doubt Hall of Fame career. Travis Kelce, I am quite sure Andy Reid is having a field day right now, planning, plotting, drawing up all sorts of things for him on Super Bowl Sunday.
Jen, I was telling this to Ryan Roberts in our number one. If Travis Kelce walks, I got the perfect replacement for him. He's in Baton Rouge, Mason Taylor, tight end for LSU.
Yes.
I think he would be now, listen, I ain't trying to get nobody better. I want the Saints to get better, but Mason Taylor would seemingly be a great fit for a team like the Chiefs, and he, I think, would maybe be there either at the 31st or 32nd pick.
Well, Mike, nobody knows these draft players better than you do. Year in and year out, you are always spot on with your analysis and your predictions about where they would go. I would love that for Mason. I think that would be a fantastic fit for him and a culture for him. Andy Reid has been one of my favorites for a long time. The culture that Chiefs squad is built in that locker room, that's what leads to championships, right? You got to have the skill and you have to have the acumen at coaching, but you also have to have the right culture. And I think for a young player like Mason to go to a place like the Chiefs, it's going to set him for his career and give him those building blocks for a very long, successful NFL career.
Jen, going back to the Super Bowl, Mike and I also talked with Mark Schlereth about this yesterday, where, you know, in the AFC Championship game, the Bills were having success running the ball with James Cook, but they gave him 13 carries in the game. And he averaged 6.5 yards per carry on those 13 carries, 2 touchdowns. But it reminded me a lot of what happened, you know, the year prior in the AFC Championship game, where the Baltimore Ravens went away from their bread and butter, which was the run game. And so, you know, my kind of point in all this is, yes, Travis Kelce may torch up the Eagles' really elite defense, but at the same time, Kellen Moore and the Eagles and that rushing attack with Saquon Barkley, I don't think Saquon's going to have 13 carries in this game. It's going to be double that.
It would be over 25. Yeah. Here's my thing. You can't out Mahomes.
You can't.
And why these teams are so hard-headed in these games, and listen, I think the world of Joe Brady, but that was a screw-up in the fourth quarter. You got to give James Cook the ball because Kansas City wasn't stopping it. So if I'm Kellen Moore, you're going to get not a teaspoon of Saquon Park. You're going to get a tablespoon, no teaspoon version.
You're getting a cup of them.
Yeah, you're getting a big time.
You're going to get a bunch of them. And it just showed that you can stop it because Kansas City, when they were going up against James Cook, they weren't able to stop him. And I think Saquon Barkley, I would expect a huge game from him if the Eagles are going to win this matchup.
And Saquon is, look, no disrespect to James Cook. He's had a fantastic season. He's a wonderful athlete. But Saquon's having the better season right now, obviously. I think he's the better running back. When you listen to him, Charlie, he is so set on proving that they can win a Super Bowl the old-fashioned way, on the ground, ground it out. I think he's going to be on fire. I'm with you. It is going to be a huge Saquon day. As I said, I do think you have to have the dual threat of getting the passing game going, but that's not what's going to win it for the Eagles. It would be Saquon in the ground game that would win it for them. You just have to pass enough that you keep that Chiefs defense honest.
Yeah, Chin, last question for you. When I think about the NFL and how it's changed dramatically, and it's a pitch and catch game today, but we saw this year the success of the running backs. They weren't paid this offseason. Man, I think of Derrick Henry, and he didn't get a ton of money to go to Baltimore. Saquon got, it was a nice deal from New York to Philly. But I think if you don't have the right quarterback, okay, you stuck in football purgatory. You're not going anywhere. And great example,
nowhere.
Look in the AFC. Look who you've got with Josh Allen. And you got Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. Poor Joe. I mean, if he had any semblance of a defense, the Bengals would have got in there. And you look in the NFC, it isn't maybe as quite as talented quarterback-wise as it is in the AFC, but you got a young Jaden Daniels. And Jalen Hurts, when he's healthy, he is one hell of a football player. That emphasis on the quarterback being the key piece is still there today.
And I don't think it's going anywhere, Mike, especially with the way the NFL is tilting the game, right? They want
yes.
it to be a pass-happy, star-driven, quarterback-driven league. They're going to keep tweaking rules to keep protecting the quarterbacks more and more. So the importance of that position is just going to keep growing. They know that's where fans gravitate to. In terms of the general fan, of course you have your diehards that love the running backs, love somebody on the line. But for the most part, it's the quarterback the general fan knows, right? And that's who the NFL is going to keep trying to ride to continue to make money, to continue with these streaming deals that they're chasing with the Amazons, the Netflix. This quarterback phenomena, I think it's just going to grow as we continue to line through future seasons.
I know you haven't given your pick yet, but give it to me. Who you like, Philly, Kansas City?
Mm.
Come on, don't do it. Don't do it for Fox. Give it to me. Come on now.
I know. I want the Eagles, but I got to go Kansas City. I think they're the more talented team.
You can't bet against Mahomes.
Nope.
Mike and I talk about it all
no,
the time.
No, I tell him, Jen, all the time, he's going to lose his money betting against Mahomes. So,
17-3 in the postseason.
I don't want to, but that's where I have to go.
Yeah, if you bet 20 times and you win 17, Charlie, you made a pretty good cash.
Yeah,
out of
absolutely.
That. Jen, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All righty. Thank you, Jen. Jen Hale, Fox Sports sideline reporter. Also, you can see her on Fox and Friends on Sunday mornings right before game day. We'll be back. Jeff Nowak will join us from Mobile, Alabama on the Senior Bowl right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers talking text line from Mobile, Alabama, covering the Senior Bowl. Saints sideline reporter and our WWL digital content producer, Jeff Nowak. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. Before we get a little bit of Senior Bowl, your thoughts, and I think we talked a little bit about this yesterday, when Mike McCarthy didn't have anything scheduled, that sort of set the tone. And the fact that you sent a private jet with the Saints officials to Philly to talk and would it lasted over 12 hours with the interview with Kellen Moore, that sort of signaled you a little bit about where this coaching search was headed.
Yeah, and with Mike in particular, I think if there was an extreme interest on the Saints end to get that interview done, it would have happened. It would have happened a while ago. And I kind of feel like for the Saints, you're really looking for a fresh start with whatever you do. And that's not to say Darren Rizzi can't be on the table, but you're making significant changes. And I just don't think they wanted to rest over the level of control. Part of me wonders if, Mike had an experience with Jerry Jones. He did not want to duplicate, and maybe his asks were a little higher than the Saints were willing to get. But, it kind of felt like if that interview happened, it was probably going to be higher. And it just did not materialize. So right now you're kind of down to, hey, Mike Kafka, Anthony Weaver, Kellen Moore, Darren Rizzi, take your pick. Doesn't sound like there's going to be any more interviews done. So, you know, I kind of, you know, you look at it now, you read the tea leaves. If there's no hire by the end of this week, kind of feels like it's probably Kellen Moore, right? But yep. You really can't do anything until after the Super Bowl. Because there'd be no incentive if you were landing on a Mike Kafka or a Rizzi or a Weaver to not get it done as early as possible. Because you got a lot of hires you're going to have to get done. You got a lot of decisions you're going to have to make. And not a ton of time to do it. This offseason is going to come fast. So, you know, it's interesting. We've heard Mike Kafka talk a couple times since he's been here. He's an impressive guy. You understand why he's getting a lot of these interviews. I talked to one of his assistants, Angela Baker, who's the tight ends coach today. She had a lot of high praise for him. So we don't want to lose the guy, but he is head coach material. So we'll see how this goes over the rest of the week. But yeah, I think we are coming down toward the end here.
Yeah, no question. Jeff, you got to see a young string bean quarterback from Canada, born in London, England today. Last couple of years, he completed 75% of his passes 2 years ago. Last year, 74%. Now, again, level of competition. But we had Jim Nagy on about a month ago, and we were talking about, Jim was like, Mike, I'm trying to get him here to play the Senior Bowl, and I think he can make a lot of bucks here. You got to see it up close and personal.
Yeah, and I mean, I've got a few insights from people who have watched him play. I talked to him today. We're talking about Taylor Elgersman, I think I'm saying his name.
Yes.
Correct. He to say he's raw is about as under the understatement of the century. The kid has never played 11-on-11 football.
Let's How about that?
You know, and in Canada they play 12. You actually have an extra person on the field. You know, like the field's wider, it's longer. The goalpost is at the end line or the goal line, not at the back of the end zone. So I mean, every day he's out here, he's learning. And what I appreciated in talking to him is, you know, he's fully aware of that. He's embracing that challenge. He's confident, but he's not arrogant. He said, I asked him what he wanted people to be saying about him by the time this week is over. And, you know, he wanted people to appreciate the amount that he will have grown from the beginning of the week to the end of the week. And even from day one to day two, you just saw him gaining confidence. You know, I think the speed of the game is something we talked about. It's going to take a little while, right? You know, just where you can throw the ball, where you can't. You know, he had one pass today that he tried to rifle in between two defenders and the linebacker picked it off. So it was like, okay, can't do that. Mark it down, move on, improve. But, you know, I would be stunned if a team doesn't look at him and say, we can work with that. We can develop that, whether he's a late-round pick, a UDFA. You know, I look at a guy like Tyson Bagent out of Shepherd who came here, really had no profile, but just kept getting better and better and better. Last time with the Bears, we saw him start games for the Bears as a rookie. He's a quality player. So, no, I've been intrigued by what I saw from him. 6'5", 220. You know, he looks the part. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Armand Mimbo left the Senior Bowl. He was having a stomach virus situation that never got better. But who won today in the trenches from what you got a good look at?
Yeah, man, you know, there's a few guys that stand out. But, you know, the guy we talked about yesterday in Gray Zabel, you know, he's turning himself into a first-round pick. And you know, anyone who thought, like, oh, we're not going to be able to steal this guy, this North Dakota State guy that nobody knows about, I mean, That's going away quick. And, you know, what makes him so attractive is not only is he doing it, he's doing it at multiple positions. He's doing it against all these big time pass rushers. And, you know, it's just kind of fascinating. And he's only going to get better and better and better. On the defensive side, you know, Mike Green at a Marshall, man.
He can rush the quarterback, brother.
Watch him go up against Josh Connerly a couple times today. He just took Josh out of his cleats on one rep. He just ran him off the line. And, you know, this is a guy who's probably a first-round pick in Connerly, who has been dominating. That just shows you. I mean, a lot of small – the great thing about the Senior Bowl is some of these smaller school guys show up and prove very quickly that, you know, that is not a detriment. They have the ability to play with these guys. And, you know, it's maybe they're a little more motivated to prove that. I don't know. Another guy, Deion Walker, I've been talking about him for 3 days. Yep. Every time I see him out there, he's a behemoth. It doesn't make sense for a guy that big to be able to move the way he does. He's 6'7", 340. And he's just walking. He had a couple plays today that he walked the offensive lineman back in, so far into the backfield that it disrupted a handoff out of the shotgun. Like, that doesn't happen. And so he's another guy that stood out. But it's been a lot of really, really impressive showings. It's impossible to get to them all in a 10-minute window. But, yeah, there's a lot of really intriguing trench prospects at the Senior Bowl this year.
Jeff, before we let you run real quick, Elijah Arroyo from Miami, the tight end prospect, he had some injury issues early on in his career, but then this past year he kind of broke out, 35 catches, 590 yards, and 7 touchdowns. He measured in 6'4.5", 251 at the Senior Bowl measurements. And, man, as you kind of post on your Twitter page, and I've seen buzz about him all over social media, he's been uncoverable in Mobile.
Yeah, he can run like hell, too.
Dude, I mean, I didn't know much about him coming in. I knew he was a mid-round draft prospect, but every time I see him line up there, it's like the defender has got to be quaking in his boots. Like, he's going to get burned, and he does. I have not seen a single rep where he got stopped. It was maybe a bad throw. I mean, he's creating easy separation, and, route running isn't everything for the tight ends. A guy like Mason Taylor, for example, like, he's a great route runner, needs to improve in his blocking a little bit. But, I asked Xavier Restrepo in there today, I just said Elijah, and he just grinned. He's like, okay, people are starting to learn what this guy can do. And he's impressive. He's going to be a guy that gets talked about a lot during this offseason.
Jeff, my thing is, how the hell did they not get into the top 12?
No defense,
yeah,
right?
Man, the defense was that sorry?
Yeah, it was bad.
Goodness great. That must have been like an LSU defense of 2 years ago.
I don't understand why Cam Ward had all those stats, though.
Yeah, right. Thank you so much, Jeff. Appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow, buddy. Thank you.
Sounds good. Y'all have a good one.
All righty. Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter and WWL digital content producer. We come back, we'll finish it off here in hour number 2 of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. We're finishing up here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 today at 6 o'clock right here on the Big 870 WWL. It'll be LSU men's basketball as the Tigers play Auburn. And then at 6:30 on the Big 870, we'll go to the Pelicans pregame. Pelicans play the Mavs tonight at 7 o'clock. And you can hear LSU men's basketball versus Auburn on 105.3 FM to finish it up. Thanks for listening today. Tomorrow, Pete Jenkins will join us talking about, he got to know Andy Reid, coach for him, and Babe Laufenberger, really good friends with Kellen Moore, will talk to us about Kellen Moore right here on the Big 870 WWL.